This meeting of the House Travel Affairs Committee will now come to order. It is 3:31 p.m. Wednesday, April 26, 2023 in Capitol Room 106. Members present are Representative Armstrong, Representative Allard, Representative Vance, and myself, Representative McCormick. And today we have Representative Pawtucket excused. I think we'll just go ahead and take a 5 minute at ease to allow more members to join the committee. So thank you. Brief at ease. Now back on the record, I just want to note for the record that we were joined by Representative Dybert at 3:32 p.m. Let the record reflect that we have a quorum to conduct business. Please take this time to silence your cell phones during the duration of the meeting. Before we begin, I would like to thank Suniva St. Clair, the House Travel Affairs Committee Secretary from Records, and Sydney Truitt from the Juno LIO for staffing the committee today. I would also like to thank my committee aide, Callan Jaifluk-Sifsoff, for providing committee aid support today. Today we have a presentation from Nicole Nelson, the president of the Alaska Legal Services Corporation. And we're also visited today by the board chair, Joe Nelson. Welcome and thank you for coming this afternoon. Ms. Nelson, would you please come forward, put yourself on the record and begin your presentation.
Good afternoon. Chair McCormick, my name is Nicole Nelson, and I am the Executive Director of Alaska Legal Services, for the record. And Joe Nelson is our volunteer board president, and although we share the same last name, there's no relation. thank you so much for sharing this, giving me this opportunity to share with you some information about Alaska Legal Services. And our new community justice worker program. The first thing I wanted to do is tell you a little bit about our organization. And then the second thing I'd like to talk about is the justice gap in Alaska. And then I want to move on to talking about our new community justice worker program that was built in response to Alaska's justice gap. And so I'm open to taking any questions that you might have as we move through, and I really appreciate all of you spending this time with me here today. So moving forward, first off, let me tell you a little bit about ALSC, Alaska Legal Services. We are a nonprofit law firm that's been providing free, comprehensive civil legal aid to low-income and rural Alaskans since we opened our doors over 50 years ago. And our mission is to ensure that there's fairness for all in the justice system, regardless of how much money you have or how far you live from a courthouse. Each day, we provide legal help for people so they can protect their livelihoods, their health, their safety, and their families. We help people with their civil legal needs as opposed to their criminal legal needs. And that's because in civil matters, unlike in criminal matters, you aren't entitled to an attorney if you can't afford one, whereas you are in criminal matters. So if you're accused of a crime, you have a right to a public defender. However, in the civil legal space, you don't have a right to an attorney if you can't afford one. And so civil legal aid ensures that there's fairness for all in the justice system. Through this legal help that we provide, we assure that people who can't otherwise afford it are able to protect their livelihoods, their health, and their families. And we believe that in justice for all, no matter your means or your distance from a courthouse. And we do this through 12 regional offices that are located throughout Alaska. We are one of the few nonprofits that is able to maintain a statewide footprint. And we do this with great support from our local communities. In every region where we have a local office, we enjoy support from those communities. Sometimes it's donated office space or contributions to keeping our doors open. We have offices in Anchorage, Bethel, Dillingham, Fairbanks, Kenai, Kodiak, Ketchikan, Kotzebue, Juneau, Nome, Palmer, and Wasilla, and Yukwaiavik. And we our staff is comprised of both paid staff, and then we also rely on a vast network of pro bono volunteers who help us stretch our limited resources to serve as many people as possible. And we've done this, and so we have been able to stretch our resources with our pro bono volunteers and our statewide footprint. And each local office, each regional office, has community-driven priorities. The offices, we survey our communities within each region every year to learn what the local office priorities are. And also our governing board enjoys representation throughout that is a statewide as well. Our board is comprised of attorneys and then also half folks who will qualify for our services. And so, and board president Joe Nelson, as I mentioned, is an attorney and he serves on our board as well, an active member of our board. Some quick facts, things that I'm proud of. So as I mentioned before, our service area is the entire state of Alaska. And within the last year, just as a snapshot in time, we were able to serve over 7,000 Alaskans in 176 different communities in the last year. And so we do this with throughout our regional offices, and but also we get outside the hub communities for sure. Too. So I'm proud of that, and we do that through a network of partnerships and being community partnerships and really reaching out to others who are serving the community too to make sure that people know that we're available to serve them irrespective of where they live within our state. We have a budget that's about $7 million total. Some portion of that, less than 10%, comes from the state of Alaska. We also enjoy support from federal grants and also donations and local contributions. And our staff is about over 50 people. Again, we have 12 statewide offices. And also recently, we have been working to establish medical legal partnerships to help expand our reach. And so we have a network of medical legal partnerships that are built into the tribally operated healthcare system in partnership with ANMC, with CANA, and then also recently with support from Providence, we've established a medical legal partnership in Anchorage as well. And this helps us expand our reach. The types of cases that we're helping on really are those bread and butter legal issues that Alaskans face on any given day. So they are issues related to family law. Somebody might be seeking protection from abuse. They might need help with housing. Perhaps they're facing foreclosure or they may be evicted from their home. People who have questions about wills or estate planning, they might need transitional or operational documents to help, like grandchildren, get into school. Sometimes we have caretakers, grandparents and caretakers of their grandchildren, and they need to be able to access healthcare or enroll their children in school. We also help people with income maintenance and consumer protection. And so these are the kind of things that we help people with on a day-to-day basis. And for all of the issues that we're talking about, they're really legal solutions, civil legal solutions, where an attorney can really make a difference for folks. But unfortunately, there are not enough resources for everyone who needs these services for those who would need to get them. And so each day we have people coming to our offices who are seeking help. For instance, we have mothers who might have been abused in front of their children and are seeking to escape domestic violence. We may have a grandfather who's struggling to care for his grandchildren that are living with him, and his house is facing foreclosure. And it's a very complicated process, and you need some legal assistance to understand what his rights are. We've assisted fishermen who have sent their equipment out of state for repairs, and to have them come back and then blow up during the middle of fishing season, and so they've lost out on their income for fishing for that season, and the out-of-state repair person is refusing to complete the repairs. And we also deal with veterans who may be denied their benefits that they've earned in service to their community, or in service to our country, and are now you know, back in Alaska and are unable to give to sustain their life. And so in each of these problems, like I said, there's a civil solution, but you don't have a right to an attorney like you would in a criminal solution or in a criminal case. And so this is where Alaska Legal Services steps in and tries to help. The services we provide are limited to those who qualify for our services. So the threshold is 125 of the federal poverty guidelines adjusted for Alaska, and up to 200% if you live in a community where, in a more remote community, where the cost of living may be higher than that. And we are also, one thing to know is that we are prohibited by federal regulation from participating in certain types of cases that, in certain types of cases that oftentimes, you know, people consider more controversial. So we're prohibited from addressing abortion, end of life abortion or euthanasia issues. And also participating in class actions. We're really just here to deal with the bread and butter legal issues that people are facing, our families and communities are facing in any given day. We do this through providing individual advice and representation. We also provide self-help materials and community education to folks to help who are going through the system unrepresented, so they might be able to go through it on their own. And we also, in addition to that, do provide representation in court in those areas where it's needed. So we have a whole range. We operate a self-help resources center that provides a website that gets information out to the public. And we, during the pandemic, this was really popular because there was the laws were changing rapidly on a day-to-day basis. And we were trying to get information distributed to the public so people understood what their rights and responsibilities were and what was happening. And so I think one of the things the stats from our last looking at our website showed that it was something like 43,000 people hit our website and downloading different bits of information to help themselves get through. We also run a pro bono training academy in partnership with Alaska Pacific University and ANTHC, which is designed to train volunteers, both lawyer and non-lawyers, about what the law is and how they might help a neighbor and help one of their friends, neighbors. And each year we leverage the resources of volunteer attorneys and others to help serve those in need, drawing down over 4,800 hours of community of free service from our volunteers. And that equates to a rough estimate of estimate of more than $500,000 in donated services per year. And we have over 400 active volunteers at any given time. So these are the things that I'm really excited about. Another one is that in 2012, the Alaska Mental Health Trust commissioned a study to see how effective our services were, and it found that there was a 5-to-1 return on all funds that were invested in our program, and that we were successful in 86% of the cases that we took on for our clients. And that was measured by the positive outcomes based on what our clients were wanting, right? So it's a satisfaction from the client perspective. And again, where do these savings come from? They came from $600,000 saved per year in avoided shelter costs when we preserve someone's housing or we get a domestic violence protective order for a family so they don't need to vacate their house and they maybe not end up in a local shelter. $2.6 million in other domestic violence avoidance work, which was related to avoiding medical and counseling costs for domestic violence survivors and their children. And then there was an additional $17.8 million in economic benefits that were from us drawing down either Social Security or veterans benefits for those who had earned those and had been unable to access those. So we have been at the forefront of fighting the epidemic of domestic violence that plagues the state, each year serving over 1,000 domestic violence survivors and their children. And that makes us the largest provider of legal aid for domestic violence survivors in the state. We help seniors and caregivers, protecting them from financial abuse and assisting with wills and probates and powers of attorney. We assist veterans and disabled individuals gain access to health care coverage and the benefits they've earned. And we have also helped over 700 families in the last year, over 700 families avoid homelessness by preventing evictions and fending off foreclosures and also advising on housing rights. So as I said before, in total, we've impacted over 7,000 Alaskans with direct legal assistance in the last year and served countless more through our website. We think about 43,000. And we have had in the last year over 2,000 people attending our community clinics and health help centers. And so that's the good stuff. But here is the problem. Here's the not so happy bits of information. No matter how hard we try, we are still forced to turn away one person for everyone that comes to our door. And that's due to our limited resources. And this is pretty consistent with national averages to justice gap analysis in the lower 48. We also know that in addition to the folks that reach us and we aren't able to help because of limited resources, there's a whole host of people on the outside who don't understand that they have a civil legal problem, so aren't even coming to us. And they also folks who don't reach our doors for other reasons, like they're far removed from the court system, from the hub communities. They don't know how to reach us or they can't get through for whatever reason. And national statistics show that that's about 92% of the people are not who need legal assistance aren't finding their way to a legal aid provider. On top of that, we're turning away about 50% of the folks who come to us anyway due to limited resources. And so what's important to know is when we're turning these folks away, we're turning them away not because their cases lack merit and not because there aren't laws that will protect them. There are, and oftentimes those laws are passed in this body. We are turning them away because even when they're seeking help with really compelling issues like seeking protection from abuse or if they're face losing their homes or they can't access the benefits they've earned, we have to turn them away because we simply don't have the resources. And this is what we're calling the justice crisis.
Representative Armstrong, Yes. You have a question.
Thank you, through the chair, and thank you for all the work that you're doing. How do you decide or determine who gets turned away?
Yes. Through the chair, Representative Armstrong, thank you so much for the question. Yes. So in order for us to make this heartbreaking determination, we have priorities, as I mentioned earlier in the presentation, that are set by each office. We survey our communities regularly and say, in the event that we have limited resources, which is always the case, and we aren't able to accept all cases, how will we triage the cases, for lack of a better word. And so at this point, those cases that we are able to take on are the ones where the people, what we and the communities that we are serving determine are the most important, which relates to protection from abuse, protecting housing, making sure that people have documents so they can get the health care that they need. And then when we look at those, we have to screen them up further also. And so we're looking at, so for instance, the lethality in a domestic abuse situation, or if there's a way that we could provide some additional assistance that the person might be able to help themselves if we gave them the right information. So we make the determinations in that way. Does that answer your question?
Yes, thank you. And follow up?
Please.
Thank you. Through the chair, and sorry, I lost my voice. Do you have information or could you share with us how much money you would need to be fully funded in order to not turn people away?
Yes. Through the chair, Representative Armstrong, thank you for the question. We don't know the full amount that we would need to be fully funded. The trust study that I mentioned before estimated that for every additional $100,000, we could serve 182 individuals. So in YSA, I don't know the amount that we would need to be fully funded at that point, because there's a whole other category too of folks who aren't coming to our door, right? So I could give you the number based on the trust study, which is $100,000. We can serve an additional 182 folks. And, I know our turned down numbers last year were about 1,800 individuals. And so we could do the math there, and that would be about $1.2 million. But that doesn't take into account the 92% of people who aren't maybe coming to us, which is sort of where we get to the community justice worker program that I'm interested in telling you a little bit more about as well.
Thank you so much.
Me too. I'm dropping everything.
So as I mentioned before, we Alaska and the nation has an enormous justice crisis. And it's funny, we used to call this a justice gap, but I've decided it's a crisis. If we're not meeting 92% of the needs, that seems like it's a crisis. It's not a gap. We're not really, you know, there's a huge problem. A gap seems something like that you might be able to step over. And this seems like something that's like a huge crevasse. Like, I don't think we're going to be able to get over it with the current way of addressing things. We need to think of things, start coming up with different methods of addressing the huge unmet needs that folks are facing. And so a couple of things that I should want to mention about the justice crisis, just by way of background before we get to the community justice worker program, because I think it also, they are in tandem. One is just this growing, the target population continues to grow every year, and Alaska Legal Services funding just really hasn't kept pace with respect to that. I mean, this is also consistent with the status of legal aid funding in the lower 48 as well. So in the last years, for instance, in 1984, Alaska Legal Services funding was $1.2 million. Our state funding was $1.2 million. This year, our state appropriation stands at $681,000. So during that time, right now we have 57% of the funding we had in 1984 to serve a population, a target population that has tripled from at that. So the target population has tripled, and we're now at about 128,000 individuals who need our help. And so in 2007, there was widespread recognition that there was this escalating justice crisis, and this led to the creation of the Civil Legal Services Fund, which was then amended in 2018. And this was passed with widespread bipartisan support, nearly unanimous bipartisan support that Alaska Legal Services was underfunded. And so there was an effort to try to increase funding for our organization, which was greatly appreciated and which is definitely needed. But in addition to funding to support our organization to provide more attorney help in this program, we needed to think about how we could innovate and do things differently to better serve the needs of the community. And this led us to develop additional partnerships. And so I wanted to make the transition now between we've had like sort of, hopefully I've explained to you what Alaska Legal Services does. There's a huge justice crisis that's happening. Part of it's due to lack of funding, and also part of it's due to just this huge unmet need and trying to figure out a way that we can get on top of this. Oh, yes.
Sorry. Before we went any further, Representative Allard had a question.
Thank you. Awesome. This is a nonprofit.
Through the chair, yes, Representative Allard, yes, we are a nonprofit.
Do you mind if I just ask?
Please follow up, yeah.
Thank you. I'm going to ask just a couple of series of questions so I understand and wrap my head around it. In the past, have you guys been funded by the state?
Through the chair, Representative Allard, yes, we have been funded through the state since we opened our doors 50 years ago, through every administration.
Do you know what your funding was last year, by any chance?
I do. Last year, the state funding, or yes.
What the state gave you.
Yes. So last year, our state funding was approximately $281,000, approximately.
And if, thank you, Chair, for giving me a little bit of leeway here. Through the chair, so it was $281,000. How much did you guys raise on your own as a nonprofit?
So our total overall budget last year was about $7 million. And so part of that comes from private fundraising. Part of it comes from federal grants, and part of it comes from like local contributions as well. And
yes, thank you. And through the chair, do you get any donations or fundraising via the corporations?
Through the chair, Representative Ballard, I'm uncertain. The corporations?
Yeah, Native corporations.
Oh, through the chair, Representative Ballard, yes, we do. We are very fortunate to receive donations from Native corporations, yes.
Do you receive donations from every corporation, or is it just a couple corporations?
Through the chair, Representative Ballard, I can go back and check, but I believe we receive
a little bit from each.
I believe so. Okay.
I think this could be my last. I'm just trying to wrap my head around
the
funding and stuff. If this isn't funded, do you guys close your doors, or is it if we just shy a little bit of the $281,000 that we couldn't make it up through the Native corporations to swoop in? And I'm only saying that because of where we're at fiscally in the state. And I don't know. I haven't recognized this in the budget. I'm sure we can look to see if there's anything in the budget this year. I don't know if you've heard. I have to go through the numbers and look. I'm just curious if you don't receive that $281,000 that you received last year,
mm-hmm.
will your doors close? And is the slideshow going to show us where those $7 million plus dollars go?
Through the chair, Representative Ballard, thank you for the question. And no, if we lose that money, our doors aren't going to close. It's a matter of us not being able to serve folks in the community. So we'll need to turn additional people away. And so that is, you know, the answer to that question. This slideshow, which we can talk to you a little bit more, is going to talk with you about a new innovative program that we're trying to use that would help us better serve the community and serve more people over time. And so that is the question that we're hoping to answer. Now, to go back to your question, which I think you're getting at, is yes, I recognize that it's tough times in the state. And
well, I'm not getting at it. I literally was just trying to absorb where the funds come
from. Oh, yeah, yeah. Okay.
I don't want you to misconstrue my intent.
No,
really,
I don't.
I'm trying to figure it out.
So what I would say is this, though, that the state dollars that we use and we're very grateful for help us leverage the other funding, our multiple other funding streams. We have about 136 different funding streams that come in, and so we weave and blend them together to support this entire, our statewide footprint. And so we use those where they will make the most sense to sort of gap fill in some places. We need to pay rent for a community. In some places, we don't. In some places, the grant funds that we are drawing down don't cover the full expense of a program, so we can stuff in a little bit of the state dollars to help make that, make the organization run.
Just one last comment on this topic. I was wanting to see some education funds be used to raise money to get more, right? So in order to get money, sometimes you have to spend money.
Mm,
and I was wondering if any of that, the dollars that you were requesting this year, could go towards helping you raise more funds. Whether you have like an auction, whether you have, you know what I'm saying, to raise money, you got to spend money sometimes to make money.
Sure.
And I know that when I do a fundraiser of some sorts, we have wine or food or whatever's there to bring in some donors. Is some of this can help with that?
So through the chair, Representative Ballard, we do a private fundraising. So we have, in fact, tomorrow, if anybody wants to know, we are having a JAMA for Justice benefit concert in Anchorage. So please come. But we do, and we have, fundraisers throughout the year. We solicit bar dues. So there's a bar checkoff dues that we're lucky the Alaska Bar Association allows people to contribute to us when they pay. So we do have we fundraise regularly, and that is part of the work that we're doing.
I'm trying to get it all through.
Okay. No. I appreciate the questions, and I'm happy to tell you about it.
Representative Vance, you have a question or comment?
Thank you, through the chair. Just talking about the demand and the clear gap, one of the demands that we're feeling in a variety of fields is the need for attorneys. So Do you have attorneys on staff, or is this purely pro bono through others, or is it a combination? I, like Representative Ballard, I'm trying to understand just the framework of what you do and how you do it, because that's one of the problems right now is that you could have a ton more funding, but then you still need the attorneys to be able to carry out the work. And we need a law school in Alaska, right? So do you have attorneys on staff? How is that process work of who makes up your employees?
Thank you for the question through the chair, Representative Vance. And that is a wonderful question. That's really, there is an attorney shortage. And so our organization, we do have attorneys on staff, and we also recruit volunteer attorneys who volunteer their time for us. In addition to that, we have other volunteers who help us meet legal needs, and our community justice worker program was designed I'm really excited to tell you about it because it's the first of its kind in the nation and is one of the ways that we are hoping to address a workforce shortage, a legal workforce shortage in Alaska. And so, I would like to tell you a little bit more about that, and hopefully it will be something that you might be excited about too.
Yes, and I think it, through the chair, it leads right into this referral network. But before you jumped into that, just you answered my question that you do have attorneys on staff that work with people directly, not just pro bono. So thank you.
Yes, that is correct.
Are there any additional questions before we continue? All right, thank you. Please continue.
So now hopefully I have answered your question with respect to ALSC's setup, the funding, or what funding we have, what's available, what the unmet need is, and also what the unmet community need is. And it's large. It's a large need. And then also there are issues, as Representative Vance pointed out, with respect to attorney shortages as well. And so faced with this a few years ago, in 2017, the Alaska court system, as part of its Access to Justice Commission, started to try to figure out sort of what the justice landscape of our state was and understand our gaps better and understand what we could do then to sort of resolve them. And a couple things that came out of this Justice for All project that was part of the Access to Justice Commission, we learned a couple of things. First off, that Alaska, they asked folks in the community, what do you do if you have a legal problem? Where do you go? And it turned out that Alaska Legal Services was the most referred to entity in the state, more so than the court system, more so than any of the other providers. If people had a legal problem, most often they knew about, they were going to come to us to try to resolve it, which is great. So we're a trusted entity. But as I mentioned before, we've got a problem because we are short funded and short staffed. And so we're needing to turn people away, no matter how hard we try. And so the next thing that this study did is it wanted to see where the legal providers were, where the attorneys were. And we found out when we looked through that, which will come as no surprise to anyone here, that most of the attorneys are located along the road system in the bigger communities like in Anchorage and Fairbanks and Juneau, with some smattering of attorneys. Also, the green there are where the public defenders are and Alaska Legal Services. So we've got a little bit more distribution of attorneys who are either working for Alaska Legal Services or working for the public defenders in some of our more rural communities. But at the same time, we wanted to find out what other who else had a bigger and wider footprint in across the state of Alaska than ALSC does, or the legal field does. And it turned out that, again, you can see that the healthcare providers, that almost down to the village, almost every community has a village health aide. And so they had a wider distribution. And so faced with this information, we at Alaska Legal Services thought, well, I wonder if we could, if there was a way that we could join forces with the healthcare community and see if we could expand our reach a little bit. And so we approached the healthcare providers at the Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium. And the person said, listen, we have, our clients are facing problems like eviction, family violence, debt and finances, and health, and having difficulty accessing health care. And we know that these are problems that I think impact their health. And we also know that you have a wider footprint than we do. And I'm wondering if we might be able to work together to try to distribute our resources, to share resources, and see if we could better meet the needs. And it turned out that this idea was very welcome, because we learned from our healthcare partners that it turned out that healthcare, that a patient's, this was something we didn't know, but that a patient's health was determined only 20% by the healthcare they receive. The other 20% was from by genetics. And then 60% of a person's health was really determined by the social, environmental, and behavioral factors, social determinants of health. Many of which of those are the things that we are trying to address when we're unraveling legal problems related to homelessness, domestic violence. And so there was sort of a little like a match made in heaven. We decided that the healthcare providers would want to work with us to develop medical legal partnerships. So we started then embedding legal staff within the healthcare setting to help address unmet civil legal needs or health impacting. And at first we thought this was just a way that we could help expand our reach a little bit and share some infrastructure with somebody who had a bigger footprint than us. But it actually turned out to be pretty transformative for us, because we learned through that process from our healthcare partners that they had already, for 40 years, had been pioneers in mid-level in developing locally based, community-grown healthcare workforce that were providing. So the community health aides that are located in each village and across the state were helping distribute and helping provide. Address health needs and areas where there weren't doctors available. And we thought, this is something that we should try with lawyers. And we wanted to build a healthcare analog to the community health aid, successful behavioral health aid, and dental health therapist programs. And so in 2019, we started working with ANTHC and Alaska Pacific University to build out training modules with our distance learning professionals that would help us help us recruit and train community justice workers, the justice analog of the community health aid program. And so we have built, in conjunction with the distance learning professionals at ANTHC and Alaska Pacific University, curriculums and trainings that help us focus on providing legal information and legal knowledge to folks who are already in those communities so that they might be able to help their neighbors and other people that have unmet needs, unmet legal needs. So this is, we've been doing this work for about 5 years, and we're really excited about it. People, and these folks are volunteers for us. They're probably employed by another organization. Many are. Some of them work for the tribal organizations. Some work in the healthcare setting. Some work for other social service agencies. And then some are law students or undergraduate students who just would like to take our courses. And as part of the training curriculum that we have developed that they take, they are then able to help another person who's in need of our services. And so right now we have 5 different modules developed. One is on SNAP benefits. So I think we've all heard a lot about the crisis that's been happening with the SNAP benefits, and our community justice workers were able to help people get through that process. There are modules that help people with respect to wills drafting. We provide some training for Indian Child Welfare Act cases workers. And also debt collection avoidance and domestic violence prevention. So fast forward, so far it's looking pretty promising. We have been able to recruit over 200 different volunteers, and 100 of those have progressed through some of the training courses and are able to help people. And then another 101 are enrolled and progressing and moving through the program. And so they will be eventually able to help people with their unmet legal needs. So when we eventually had this armed with this information, which took us about 5 years to develop and start rolling out and and get some evidence to see how it was working. We've had 100% success rate for the individuals who have helped somebody with a case, which is great. We did have, there was a, I'd say, of the 100 cases that have gone through, 84 were successful. There were another, the difference between those that were, we were able, that they weren't unsuccessful, it's just the client withdrew. So, but people have been able to get the help that they need. And so based on this information, we went to the Supreme Court with the support of the Alaska Bar Association. And we said, we would like to have a change to the bar rule that would allow individuals who are properly trained and supervised by Alaska Legal Services, who aren't lawyers, to be able to practice it for Alaska Legal Services on limited scope legal areas, right? To provide limited scope legal assistance to folks in the community. We would, as long as we inform the individuals that they're not attorneys, we will put the candidate through for approval, and the scope of their practice can change with the evidence of their proficiency. And so this new bar rule was passed in November of last year. And so we are looking forward now to building up our training and continuing to partner with Alaska Pacific University and the Alaska Native Tribal Consortium's distance learning professionals to build out additional programming that mirrors sort of the community health aid program, the successful community health aid program, so that we can build up a new category of justice workers within illegal workers within Alaska who are based in our community, in the communities in which they are serving, and would be able to provide that assistance. And so the thing that's really exciting about this is that it's the first of its kind in the nation. And we were recently, some Access to Justice researchers from the Lower 48 are interested in studying the program because they think that it has potential for solving or helping address not only Alaska's access to justice crisis, but also that in the Lower 48 as well. And so there are researchers, one of which is Dr. Becky Sandifer, who won a MacArthur Genius Award for Access to Justice Researching thing, is looking at our program to see, to help us model and scale it for distribution both in Alaska and in the Lower 48. And so we were recipients of last year. There were 50 Civic Innovation, the National Sciences Foundation Civic Innovation, Civic Opportunity Grants awarded nationwide. We were one of 50 folks who were chosen. These weren't related to legal issues. It was just any issue, a big problem in the U.S., and potential solutions. And so we were one of those. 50 of us submitted applications for round two funding. And so 20 will be selected, and if we are awarded, we will receive $1 million that will be invested into our program over the course of a year to help scale it up as a potential solution for the access to justice crisis both in Alaska and in Lower 48. So that is the Community Justice Worker Program that I'm hopeful about. It gives me hope that we will be able to figure out a way to turn the curve and make sure that we can address all the really critical legal needs that our fellow Alaskans really need help with and aren't able to get at this moment. So I'm happy to answer any questions you might have.
With any questions? Representative Armstrong.
Thank you, through the chair. I just wanted to say thanks for your presentation, everything you're doing. Oftentimes we learn a lot of sad stuff and we don't always have the solutions and we're just left feeling bad. And it's so cool to see an Alaskan group that's leading nationally on something and really solving this. So thank you for all the work that you're doing. It really means a lot.
Representative Divert.
Completely agree with Representative Armstrong. Thank you for all of your work and innovation, and it's just wonderful to hear this story. I guess I have one question, and the part where the attorney is helping someone in a local community, in giving them advice and helping them? What are some stumbling blocks that you've seen in that two-way discussion?
So, through the chair, Representative Dybert. So I'm not sure I'm understanding your question entirely. So,
Do you need? Well, I guess is it by phone? Is it by visit? Is it by broadband? Is it
for attorneys or the community justice workers?
Between them both.
Between them both. Yeah. So we have. So our offices. We have statewide offices. We have locations in each of our hub communities, but you know, it's in order for people before the pandemic, people used to just swing by the office or drop in, and that became hard over the last several years. So for people to connect with us, they need to, you know, either come to our physical office or be able to connect with us via phone or online, and that presents challenges for folks. For sure, especially those who don't have unlimited broadband or don't have that kind of access. So it puts folks in our most remote communities really at a disadvantage when they're trying to access the same level of services that others who are along the road system might have. You can't just drive down somewhere to get assistance. And so that's problematic. And also, for instance, if you're preparing for a court hearing or you're preparing for something like that, if you are in, you know, if you're in a different place than where the person who's providing you legal assistance is, sometimes that's really hard too, because it's hard for you to have, like, oftentimes when someone needs help or you're going before a tribunal, I keep wanting to say it, you call you guys judges. I'm sorry. But it's, you know, when you're going before a tribunal, you need to talk to each other to understand what's actually happening. And that's hard to do if you're in separate places at separate times. And there are workarounds with respect to that. Also, there are things when if you have, you know, when we import folks from outside to our remote communities, and you all know this, and they often don't know things that, as well as don't know about what's available within a community and how to address the problems. I know I've been living in Alaska for 25 years now, and I learn something new every day about it. And I think, you know, the solutions I had when I first came here, the solutions that I would offer to people as a young lawyer who had just moved up from the Law 48, I would not do that again. I mean, I think that I made a lot of mistakes because I didn't understand what might be available in a community, and it wasn't. So, you know, I think it's important for us to have folks who are trying to provide help really understand the communities they're from and what's available to them.
Any other questions or comments? So we are also joined by President, as I mentioned, Joe Nixon, and it's Joe Nixon, I apologize, Joe Nelson. Mr. Nelson, if you'd like to come up and just provide some remarks, right ahead.
Thank you, Chair McCormick. I'll keep mine brief. I don't have a presentation, and it's been awesome to sit in the back here and watch through this presentation again. Probably the best thing is a little bit of a background about me and why I'm doing what I'm doing. Who's my Tlingit name? I'm from Yakutat. I am an attorney. I grew up in Yakutat, but I've been a member of the Bar Association for over 20 years in the First Judicial District here in Juneau. My license is active, but I'm not taking cases. I've got a lot of other jobs, a lot of other hats and things I do. And one of them for some time now has been volunteering on the board for Alaska Legal Services. And the board is all entirely volunteer. And I guess one thing I want to underscore about the presentation here and what came to mind to me is really just a concept that's common sense, but it's about empowerment, empowering the communities and the folks that are that we're serving. Alaska, as we know, is a unique. All states say they're unique, but no states are as large as we are and as dispersed as we are, have as many languages as we do, as many different cultures as we do operating. And it's truly a powerful challenge. But when you pivot a little bit to embrace the communities and the people you're serving, then the magic can happen. And this here program really is doing something powerful in that way. And like Nicole has said, didn't dream it up. There's models that have been proven out through the medical community and the dental health aid program and these other programs. Because as was mentioned, we don't have a law school here. Every single one of our attorneys in the state did not go to law school in Alaska. They did not learn Alaska law in law school. You have to come and learn Alaska law on the job or take the Barbary bar review thing to try to pass the bar and half the people don't pass the bar. So it's definitely a interesting place to live and to work and to call home. And the gap that we're talking about, the crisis we're talking about, it's with folks that by definition are under the poverty level. And that isn't even touching on the fact that most people on the street, you walk into the street out right here and ask them if they can afford an attorney. No, you just can't. People of means cannot afford attorneys nowadays. So we don't even touch on that issue, I guess. But the point on all those comments, though, are we need to change the system to start to see some benefit. And this community justice worker program is the beginning of a system that's changing. It was not a guarantee that the Supreme Court was going to sign off on this change. To allow this shift to happen, that happened, and we were excited and moving forward on so many realms, and it's just the shifts of the mindset. And you can see it in all of our communities that desperately need the educators, the healthcare workers. Growing up in Yakutat, we've all in all our villages, we've dealt with teacher aides, we've dealt with the health aides, like we've said, that were usually local people that were trained to do the work. And this, it's just, can't lament the fact that it's taken over 50 years to get here. But, well, let's race through this, and hopefully our kids won't know any different, that actually this crisis is able to be mitigated. And we actually have a bunch more that are making a living wage by doing the work. Helping just grow the whole movement here. So it's for me, it's just hugely exciting to be part of Alaska Legal Services at this time when we're not running from the challenges, as we mentioned, and we're coming at it to bring solutions and really empower our communities to advocate for themselves.
Through the chair, thank you, Joe. And I also had one thing I neglected to mention in my presentation, but part of our plan is developing a community justice resource center, which is in conjunction with Alaska Pacific University and ANTHC, which would also have hub locations in each of the regions where ALSC has a local office, so in all of the hub communities. And we intend that each of those would have an apprenticeship program, a local apprenticeship program, to account for hands-on practice-based learning that's in the community. And so, and right now, as part of that, the first step, the first two locations would be, that we're proposing right now, is in one in Bethel and one in Kodiak with our partners there. But then we hope to expand it to, again, all of the communities where we have a local office. And I think this idea of practice-based learning, apprenticeship programs, is really what is going to be helpful.
Well, thank you very much for presenting. I want to thank you for being here. I know we had some scheduling issues and you came down and we were able to have you, so we're very thankful to have you. But I think I would just like to thank you on behalf of my community for the work that you do to us. I don't want to be hyperbolic, but we really would be lost without you. I think a lot of people struggle with legal issues in rural Alaska. And so, we're really just internally grateful to the services that you provide for us. I just think it's awesome and incredible that you're modeling your system after the health aides. Coming from a region that's been served for a very long time by health aides, you couldn't have picked a better system to model yourself after. So I'll have to admit, I held my back a little bit. I wanted to be like, yes, yes, after every slide. So this is just incredible, the work that you're doing. And I just really want to thank you for the services that you provide to our communities and to our people. So, yeah, thank you very much. I guess if you have any more comments, please. No?
Thank you so much.
Yeah. So I want to thank members of the committee for your questions and comments. And again, I just want to thank Ms. Nelson and Mr. Nelson, no relation, for presenting today. The time is 4:28 p.m., and this hearing, the House Tribal Affairs Committee, is now adjourned.